Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode contains distressing themes, profanity, and descriptions of sexual violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. After being linked to the murders of three women in Glasgow, the perpetrator seemed to be able to evade capture despite having one of the most well-known faces circulating in the press. Tens of thousands of statements were collected, and nearly 1,000 suspects were interviewed. Due to the religious texts he quoted to a victim's sister, the nickname given to the prime suspect was Bible John. He was undetectable, but far from forgotten.
His victims had gone to the Barrowland Ballroom in Glasgow's East End, a well-known venue for single people meeting partners.
All wore black and all were strangled.
First to die was auxiliary nurse Patricia Docker in 1968. 6 months later, the partly clad body of Jemima MacDonald, a mother of three, was found in a derelict tenement.
The third, Helen Puttick, was found in a back court in Earl Street, Scotstoun in October the same year.
Welcome to Season 9, Episode 2 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Please listen to Season 9, Episode 1 for Part 1 of this two-part case. In April 1971, almost 2 years after Bible John's last known victim was murdered, another body was found. The remains were discovered next to a railway line at Babcock and Wilcox Engineering Works in Renfrew. The victim had been badly beaten, and her body was significantly decomposed. A note found close by read, "Mr. Polis, I have killed that woman in cold blood." The note was signed Bible John. Detective Superintendent Joe Beattie was still leading the hunt for the killer, and he had a team of four detectives working alongside him. 40,000 witnesses had been interviewed in relation to the inquiry. However, there had been no promising leads in the case for months. The note left at the scene in Renfrew was alleged to have been written by the most wanted man in Scotland. Still, the investigators were sceptical that it had actually been penned by the killer of the first three victims, Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald, and Helen Puttick. After an inquiry was undertaken, the woman found by the railway was identified as 37-year-old Dorothea Meacham, a nurse from Renfrewshire who had gone missing 6 weeks earlier in late February. Dorothea had been at a family party in the Cocklestone area on February 28th and never made it home to Kirkland New Crescent. According to witnesses who provided statements during the missing persons inquiry, they heard screaming near the bridge over the railway line close to McClough Avenue. A man named Richard Cabruff was identified as someone seen crossing the bridge on the night Dorothea went missing. 38-year-old Cabruff was well known to the police, having been jailed for 2 years for attacking women in the 1950s. Following his release from prison, Cabruff, who was nicknamed the Snake, turned to housebreaking and was brought to Glasgow Sheriff Court after being apprehended. Cabruff escaped custody and broke into a nursing home. There he allegedly raped a 26-year-old woman who was suffering from terminal cancer. The victim died before any legal action could be taken. In 1964, Richard Cabruff went on to rape a prison officer's wife. He had been given trustee status in the prison and used his privilege to access the victim's home. Cabruff was released 6 years later. When questioned about the murder of Dorothea Meacham, he was alleged to have said, "I've been thinking it over and just want to say I didn't murder the woman. It was an accident. She screamed. I didn't steal the clothing. I panicked and only took them to get rid of them." Richard Cabruff denied making the statement to police during his trial at Glasgow High Court in July 1971, and despite the note found next to Dorothea's body claiming that Bible John was responsible, the jury found Cabruff guilty. He was sentenced to life in prison. In the years that followed, many murder cases were believed to have possible links to Bible John. On October 2, 1977, the body of 36-year-old Hilda McCauley was found in bushes in Renfrewshire by two young boys. Hilda hadn't come home after a night out, and she had last been seen leaving the Plaza Ballroom in Govan Hill, Glasgow, with a smartly dressed man. Hilda had been beaten and strangled, and her handbag was missing from the scene. 2 months later, on December 4th, the body of 23-year-old nurse Agnes Cooney was discovered in Moorland near Caldercrooks, North Lanarkshire. She was last seen 2 nights earlier leaving the Cladder Social Club in Glasgow. Her friend Marion McCluskey later told the Daily Record that their friend group had usually stuck together on nights out. Marion added, "The girls never worried about being unsafe when we were out, as we would usually end up at a pal's house. We would even joke about having to be careful in case Bible John got us." Like Hilda McCauley, Agnes had been beaten and her handbag was missing. She had also been stabbed multiple times. In April 1979, 20-year-old Anna Kenny was found murdered in a shallow grave in Argyle. She had gone missing in August 1977. Similarities between the murders in Glasgow and the murders of two teenage friends in Edinburgh that same year didn't go unnoticed. On October 15th, 1977, 17-year-old friends Helen Scott and Christine Eady went out together at the World's End pub on the High Street. They left together at closing time, but neither of the teenagers made it home. Their naked bodies were found the following day over 6 miles apart in fields in East Lothian. They had been beaten, raped, and strangled. One leg of Christine's tights was tied around her neck. The other had been used to bind her wrists behind her back. Eventually, Helen Scott and Christine Edie's murders were linked to a man named Angus Sinclair. Sinclair had killed a 7-year-old girl named Catherine Greenhill in 1961 when he was 16 years old. And in 1978, he murdered 17-year-old Mary Gallagher in Glasgow. At the time of his conviction for the murder of Helen and Christine in October 2014, Sinclair was serving a life sentence for multiple sexual assaults on children under the age of 14. He was thought to have committed the murders with his brother-in-law, Gordon Hamilton, who died 18 years before the trial. The murders of Anna Kenny, Hilda McCauley, and Agnes Cooney were believed to be linked to Sinclair. Still, he was never charged in relation to their deaths. Angus Sinclair lived in Glasgow at the time of the murders attributed to Bible John, but he did not resemble any of the sketches or photo fits released by the police. Glasgow investigators began reviewing the case of Bible John in the autumn of 1995. From their headquarters at Partick Police Office, they uploaded thousands of statements from the murder inquiries of Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald, and Helen Puttock into a database. Assisted by an expert in crime analysis, the computer system would be able to highlight any links between names and events in the statements from the three murder investigations. Detective Chief Inspector Jim McEwen said, "For the first time, modern policing techniques are being applied to this case." Detective Superintendent Joe Beattie, who led the original investigation, had since retired. But when interviewed, he made a shocking revelation. He explained that the three murders had never really been linked, stating, "There is certainly evidence that would have come up in a DNA test. But of course, we didn't have DNA testing in those days. If the man was put in front of an ID parade, then it was up to the witnesses to pick him out. Everyone has their own idea as to who Bible John was, but I have never been convinced that he carried out all three killings." Helen Puttock's murder was the main focus of the review. Her sister Jean had provided detailed statements about the prime suspect's appearance and demeanour, but there was also evidence found at the scene in 1969 that could not be forensically analysed until decades later. Semen stains had been found on the tights wrapped around Helen's neck. In 1995, forensic technology had advanced to the point where a DNA profile could be obtained from the semen stain and compared with suspects. There was a man who stood out during the reinvestigation. However, it would not be easy to rule him in or out of the inquiry. John Irvin McInnes was 31 years old at the time of the Bible John murders, and a very different man than he had been in his youth. Raised in the Plymouth Brethren Church by his overbearing mother Elizabeth, McInnes and his siblings were brought up to shun alcohol, smoking, gambling, and places of entertainment. McInnes' father died in 1957 when he was 15 years old, and struggling to find some guidance and a sense of belonging, he joined the Scots Guard when he turned 18. His former platoon instructor recalled him as being a sad figure and an awkward boy with no confidence. By 1968, McInnes was back in Glasgow and had married a woman named Ella. They had two children, Lorna and Kenneth, and McInnes soon began working as a furniture salesman. His former employer, Jim Goodfellow, later remarked, "He was a real oddball, a loner, and was always spouting the Bible. I remember interviewing McInnes because he was so smart, tidy, polite, and quiet. Even then, he was quoting the Bible." McInnes had since left the Plymouth Brethren and was known to drink and gamble a lot. His boss said that McInnes often missed meetings on Thursday nights because he would go to the Barrowland Ballroom instead. Jock Fisher, a friend of McInnes, said, "I used to go to Barrowland at the same time as John. He was always really smartly dressed, always wore a cravat, and in the pub he was always quoting the Bible. One of his favourite quotes was from the Corinthians. He used to say, 'Although I speak with tongues of men and angels and have no charity, I am nothing.'" In the early 1970s, McInnes and Ella divorced, and she moved away with their two children. He was seen as a loner, and McInnes became a recluse and attempted to end his life multiple times. In his final attempt in April 1980, he could not be revived after he severed an artery in his upper arm. During the review of Helen Puttock's murder, John McInnes's name came up. Investigators obtained DNA from McInnes's relatives to compare with the semen sample found on Helen Puttock's tights. Analysts concluded that there was a partial match between his siblings' DNA and the DNA found in 1969. In January 1996, a Strathclyde police spokesman, Superintendent Lewis Munn, was confident in the direction of the investigation. He said, "Further inquiries have yet to be made, but we think we may know the identity of the person who may have been responsible for the death of Helen Puttock."
Police in Glasgow may be a step closer to discovering the identity of a serial killer who murdered three women in the 1960s.
Even if the forensic tests show John McInnes killed Helen Puttock, they won't necessarily prove he killed the other two women. But they could help finally resolve the mystery of who was Bible John.
Advances in DNA testing mean that police have more of a chance of concluding long-running unsolved murder investigations like the Bible John killings and the World's End murders in Edinburgh, where a team of detectives are reviewing evidence from the deaths of Helen Ann Scott and Christine Eady to see if the new DNA tests might help track down their killers.
Helen Puttock's widower George struggled to cope when her murder investigation was reopened. After the police informed him that they were reviewing the case, he suffered a heart attack. George told the Daily Record that he had come up with his own theories in the decade since Helen was murdered. "For years, I was convinced Helen had been killed by the Yorkshire Ripper. I had managed to link him to the place and the time. What everyone didn't seem to understand all these years was that I was dying inside. All these years of pain and anger. It was so bad that I never had the courage to visit her grave after the funeral." George spoke about the media coverage at the time of Helen's death and how she had been portrayed. He had filed lawsuits to defend his wife's reputation. "People made her out to be a tart. That's what hurts the most. I want people to know what Helen really was. A terrific mum and a vivacious girl." George remarried in 1973, and his new wife Mavis gave birth to a son Mark, who was raised alongside David and Michael, the sons George shared with Helen. Speaking about the news that the police thought they knew the identity of Helen's killer, George said, "I would be relieved if they prove beyond any question that this person had done it. The police need to put the record straight. They have come in for an awful lot of criticism. I know the efforts that went in at that time. They couldn't have done anything more. It would be a vindication of their efforts if they got him. It would be proof that they never ever gave up." George and Helen's son David, who was 31 years old at the time, added, "I would have killed the murderer, no question. I wanted to see him go through the same pain as Mum did. I will never forget that he got away with this. I will never forgive him or his family. I just can't. What really hurts is that I didn't know my mum better. I didn't see how pretty she was like Dad describes her. I was too young to know her well. The police applied to the Procurator Fiscal for permission to exhume John McInnes's remains from a cemetery in Stonehouse, South Lanarkshire in late January 1996. Dr. Mary Cassidy, a top forensic pathologist who later became the state pathologist in Ireland, was tasked with handling the exhumation on behalf of the Crown. She said at the time, "There will be no doubt whether this is Bible John or not. If DNA testing had been around in the days of Jack the Ripper, things could have been very different. I've only been at one exhumation before, and I was amazed at how much of the body was left. It all depends on soil conditions, but we hope to find more than just a pile of bones."
Pathologists are beginning tests on the body of the man police believe may be Bible John.
Tight security surrounded the five-hour operation, which began at dawn. Police now hope scientific tests will bring to an end a 27-year murder mystery.
On the morning of February 1st, 1996, temperatures were below freezing and a tent had been erected over John McInnes's gravesite in Stonehouse Cemetery. His casket had been placed on top of his father's casket, and when his mother died in 1983, she was also interred in the same grave. Dr. Cassidy wasn't fazed by the difficult task. She remarked, "Death is my job. I deal with it and see it firsthand every day. It's not the dead person I feel sorry for. It's the relatives, or in a case like this, the victims. This is a pretty straightforward task, but murders are what makes this job exciting. Obviously, this is a particularly fascinating case, and I'm delighted to be involved."
The grim task of exhuming the grave of John McInnes began at first light this morning. Detectives believe the former soldier, who committed suicide in 1980, was the serial killer Bible John, who terrorised Glasgow in the 1960s.
In the extreme cold, police had to use pneumatic drills to penetrate the frozen ground. Then, out of sight, two forensic pathologists began the task of unearthing the remains. About 50 journalists and photographers, kept at a respectable distance, witnessed today's exhumation. A quarter of a century after the murders, the investigation is once again making the headlines.
It will take pathologists in Glasgow around 3 weeks to complete the DNA tests. Then, police and the families of his victims will finally know whether or not John McInnes was Bible John.
Once McInnes's casket was removed from the grave, his body was taken to the mortuary where hair and bone samples were extracted. The samples were then sent to the forensic laboratory for McInnes's DNA to be compared to the semen sample found on Helen Puttock's tights.
The process of matching DNA samples, which has become commonly known as genetic fingerprinting, is a complex and precise science with no known shortcuts.
Well, first of all, you have to dissolve the bone. Once we've dissolved the bone, you can extract away all the biomolecules that you're not interested in, such as protein, leaving you with a DNA solution. You can then take that DNA solution and amplify specific regions of it that you're interested in.
If it's been moist, if it's been warm, the DNA starts to break down. DNA within us at the moment is a long molecule. The longer it leaves after death, the more it breaks down, the more it becomes difficult to get an accurate DNA profile from it.
Investigators had hoped that forensic odontologists could examine McInnes's teeth to compare them with a bite mark inflicted on Helen Puttock, but McInnes had been wearing dentures at the time of his death. Offering his opinion, Glasgow University oral pathology professor Donald MacDonald remarked, "The mark on the right wrist of Helen Puttock could be a bite caused by the teeth of John McInnes. Because of the limited detail evident in the bite, it is not possible to make a valid judgment about the probability that the mark on Helen Puttock's wrist was a bite made by John McInnes. The odontological evidence does not therefore point clearly or convincingly to John Irvin McInnes as being the originator of the bite.
Strathclyde police say DNA tests are continuing on the remains of the man they believe was the 60s serial killer, Bible John. And they warn a final outcome in the complex scientific process is not imminent. That news has enraged the family of former soldier John McInnes. His remains were exhumed from a Lanarkshire graveyard more than 2 months ago. Now his relatives say detectives should publish their findings or clear the McInnes family name.
Initially, the police had high hopes of an early and positive DNA match, proving McInnes had raped and murdered Helen Puttock all those years ago. And that's even using samples from a corpse, and a 16-year-old one at that, as in the case of John Irvin McInnes.
After months of delays, the Crown Office in Edinburgh finally issued a statement about the DNA results.
Released on news agency wires within the past hour, a five-page statement from the Crown Office saying there is not sufficient evidence to link John McInnes to the scene of the murder of Helen Puttock. It adds there is no evidence to suggest that stains or hair left near the body of Helen Puttock originated from John McInnes.
Well, I would hope there's a public apology for the McInnes family for the way they've been treated by this whole appalling escapade. And I hope it's given the same publicity as all the inferences and allegations was made 5 months ago.
Strathclyde Police's own labs couldn't make a match. It's believed there were problems separating DNA from bone fragments. Samples were then sent to more sophisticated labs at Cambridge University and Munich, where again no match could be made. Tonight's development brings to an end an awkward 5 months for Strathclyde Police, but the Bible John affair is still far from over.
The results were yet another devastating blow for Helen Puttock's widower, George, who spoke of how the police had raised not only his hopes, but the hopes of his sons. George told the Daily Record, "Every time an inquiry into Helen's murder is mentioned, it brings back all the grief for myself and my family. And if they don't close the inquiry for good, I'm certain something like this will happen again. I have been treated dreadfully. Strathclyde Police seem to have forgotten there are people who are still suffering. I feel for the family of John McInnes. They don't deserve this either." Decades later, Dr. Mary Cassidy was interviewed about her life as a forensic pathologist. She voiced her opinion that a definitive result may have been possible if the investigators had waited 10 more years before exhuming John McInnes. DNA at that time just wasn't quite there yet for that kind of material. "It is now," she said. "With the Bible John 1, we were just a wee bit premature in rushing to do it at that time. But hindsight is a wonderful thing."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In 1993, a woman had come forward to tell the police that she believed she knew the true identity of Bible John. 42-year-old Evelyn George had seen news articles about the case and felt that her 63-year-old brother-in-law fit the bill. James Hunter had sexually abused Evelyn from the age of 3 until she was 17 years old. She later told the Daily Record, "The abuse happened hundreds of times, and often after he finished, he would recite verses of the Bible at me. 4 years ago, there were stories in the papers about Bible John. That's when I went to police." Evelyn explained that she had put what had happened to the back of her mind for years, but it resurfaced when she was in her mid-20s. When she told her family members about the abuse she endured throughout her childhood, they stopped speaking to her until another victim came forward. It was only then they accepted Evelyn had been telling the truth. James Hunter was ultimately cleared of any involvement in the murders attributed to Bible John. He was, however, sentenced to 12 years in prison for sexual abuse in March 1997. Detective Superintendent Joe Beattie, who had originally led the investigation into Bible John, passed away in February 2000. He had told reporters multiple times that he was never convinced that the murders of Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald and Helen Puttick were the work of a serial killer. In October 2000, a new suspect emerged when a US citizen contacted psychologist Ian Stephen after reading a profile of the killer the professor had published online. Professor Stephen was told that a relative of the informant had been behaving strangely in the late 1960s when he was living in Glasgow with his wife and children. The man was the son of a police officer and had been a member of the Boys' Brigade. He also bore a resemblance to the photo fit of Bible John, and he had moved to England in 1970. After Professor Stephen passed this information on to Strathclyde Police, retired CID officer Caroline Hughes told the press, "This is fascinating because a lot of people who worked on this at the time believed it was a police officer who was responsible, or at least someone with a knowledge of the police. The other interesting aspect is the fact that this man has a lapel badge on his suit jacket, which could tie in with the Boys' Brigade connection. Bible John's teeth were very distinctive, almost as good as a fingerprint, and if this man's dental records could be sourced, the officers would know very quickly if they had the right man." As it turned out, the man had been questioned and eliminated from the inquiry in 1970. The case continued to be reviewed periodically, and several men who had been questioned during the original investigation were asked to provide DNA samples. In 2004, DNA found at the scene of a minor crime was said to be an 80% match to the DNA found on Helen Puttock's clothing. Detective Chief Superintendent David Swindle was leading the inquiry, and it was reported that the police were confident the person who committed the minor crime was related to Bible John. However, frustratingly, nothing more came of the supposed breakthrough. Later that year, a retired detective revealed that he believed Bible John's words would be the key to identifying Helen Puttock's killer. The former officer disclosed that the police had still not revealed the exact chapter that the killer had mentioned. Quote, "It was a specific text and one which is popular to this day. If I started the sentence, 90% of people could finish it. That's how well known it is. The man running the inquiry, Joe Beattie, was a lovely man, but he also gave a lot of information to the press at the time. There was hardly anything left over, and the Bible quote was something which we tried to protect." The following year, Strathclyde Police opened an unsolved cold case unit led by Detective Superintendent Kenny Waters. The officer pledged to the public that the unit would examine the cases where no one has been detected or where someone has been reported to the Crown Office, but a decision has been taken not to proceed. "Some of the cases will predate 1975, Waters said, "and ones such as those which fall under the Bible John banner will be included." In October 2005, Les Brown, a retired detective chief inspector who had been a member of the Serious Crime Squad in Glasgow in the late 60s, passed on information to the Unsolved Cold Case Unit about someone he believed matched the description of Bible John. Brown said that in late 1969 he had arrested a man outside the Barrowland Ballroom following reports that the individual had been arguing with a woman he met inside. The man told DCI Brown that his name was John White and that he lived on St Andrew Street. It was later determined that he had given a false name and in fact lived with his mother in the Gorbals. Suspecting that there could be a connection to the Bible John investigation, Brown recalled, "We called in the officer in charge of the case. He walked around him once and said, 'That's the nearest yet, but it's not him.' We were told to let him go. What could we do? We had told the officer in charge and the next day we were hauled away to another murder. After we arrested him, the murders stopped. That might or might not be significant. In hindsight, maybe we should not have let him go." A few years later, Les Brown spoke with another Glasgow detective who had arrested a man outside the Barrowland Ballroom. The man had been hit in the head with a baton and needed to be taken to the hospital for stitches. When his handcuffs were removed, he managed to escape. The man had told Detective Chief Inspector Brian McLaughlin that his name was John White and that he lived on St Andrew Street. As Brown told the Herald, "It wasn't just that he matched the description or gave a false name. It was his whole demeanour. This was a guy who was just about to take a girl home to wherever, and he's been interrupted in the process. You'd think he'd be annoyed, but he never batted an eye." It just so happens that in December 2005, a man named John Edgar identified himself as the man Les Brown had spoken about. Edgar explained that he had jumped out of a window at the Royal Infirmary because he was drunk. However, he maintained that he had nothing to do with the murders. Edgar said, "I'd give them DNA if they want it, and I'd sue anyone who said I was Bible John. I still hope they catch the bastard who did it. I've been ribbed by my friends for years after I told them I was arrested twice. I was even told to stand in a lineup so Helen Puttock's sister could take a look at me. Joe Beattie, heading the investigation, was with her as she looked at the lineup, but she didn't pick me out. In a book Les Brown released earlier that year, he described former detective Joe Beattie's reluctance to consider suspects that did not match the photo fit. The former detective chief inspector wrote, "By that time, Joe had developed an emperor complex. He was so obsessed with catching Bible John, he believed he'd instantly recognise him." DCI Brian McLaughlin spoke out in 2012 about the description of Bible John that had been published based on Helen's sister Jean's recollection. He said that the description given by the manager of the Barrowland Ballroom was different from the one the police focused on. McLaughlin told the Express newspaper, "It was a busy place, and the stewards had to know their stuff. The man in charge was particularly good at his job and had a good memory for faces. The man who left the ballroom with Helen Puttock got into an argument with him over some money that was stuck in a cigarette machine. It was a dispute over 10 pence, which sounds ridiculous now, but it was the price of a pint in those days. Eventually, the man agreed to come back the next day to collect his money when the machine had been emptied, but of course he never did. The manager was never happy with the painting, both facially or the colour of his hair. I was very impressed with him as a witness." In May 2007, 61-year-old Glasgow native Peter Tobin was convicted of murdering a 23-year-old Polish student named Angelika Kluk at a church in Glasgow. Tobin had a history of violent sexual assault against young girls and women, and his former wives recounted years of horrific sexual and physical abuse, some of which had been prompted by the fact that they were menstruating. Sanitary pads had been found by the bodies of Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald, and Helen Puttock. Tobin had been in his early 20s at the time of the Bible John murders, and was known to go out to dance halls in Glasgow before he moved to Brighton in 1969, around the time that the killing stopped. An investigation called Operation Anagram was set up to see if there were any links between Tobin and unsolved homicides throughout the UK. Because of Tobin's age, religious background, past violent offending, and the suggestion that he had attacked ex-partners while they were on their period, the police had to consider the possibility that he was Bible John. In 2011, a woman named Patricia Chambers came forward to report that she had been raped by a man she met at the Barrowland Ballroom in the late 1960s. While watching a Crime Watch appeal about Peter Tobin, she recognised him as her attacker. "I've no doubt in my mind that Bible John and Peter Tobin are the same person," she said. "Everything was the same about my attack. The place where Bible John met women and what he did to them. I know it's Tobin." No conclusive link was found between Peter Tobin and Bible John, but the police did uncover two bodies in the garden of a house Tobin lived in Margate. Tobin allegedly claimed to a psychiatrist that he had killed over 40 women, and goaded the police to prove it. He died in custody in October 2022. In February 2008, Patricia Docker's son Alex spoke out for the first time in 40 years. He described how he feels whenever he sees a picture of his mother on the television or in the newspapers. Alex told the Daily Record, "There is the four-year-old part of me that recognises the lady as my mother, but the rational me, the adult, sees her in a more detached way. I only have the vaguest memories. Little things like walking in a park with her in Glasgow. I do feel dreadfully sorry that her life was ended in such a way, and at such a point where she was barely into her 20s. I can't say that I have suffered in a tangible way. It is difficult to gauge how it may have affected me. Who knows what it would have been like if she hadn't died. 2 years later, Helen Puttock's sister Jean, who had provided the description of the prime suspect, passed away aged 74. Helen's widower George believed the police had focused too much on Jean's evidence. In 2021, George said, "The police placed too much pressure on Jean, who would have been drunk that night as well. Her recollections would have been hazy. I think a lot of mistakes were made, and now there is no evidence, so I don't think we'll ever get any answers." Jean gave descriptions, but she'd had some whiskies before going to the Barrowlands. Police should have looked for more witnesses, but Joe Beattie, the officer in charge, was set that she was the only reliable, true witness. Retired Glasgow detective Joe Jackson agreed with George Puttock. He said that the police should have considered the description given by the bouncers and the manager who saw the man with Helen and Jean. The former detective added, "Their evidence did not seem to count for much with Mr. Beattie." Many believe that the murders had been committed by different people and that the media had created a myth through the tunnel vision of the investigating officers, who seemed to be looking for a single killer who didn't exist. The families of the victims, Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald, and Helen Puttock, never recovered from the horrifying ordeal they endured. In 2021, George Puttock spoke candidly about the impact Helen's murder had on their youngest son, Michael. He said, "Sadly, Michael passed away last year. He was tormented by Helen's death. My son never got over the loss of his mother and was affected by it his whole life. He found out about her murder by mistake from a school friend, as I had wanted to wait until he was about 12 before telling both my boys what happened. But Michael found out when he was about 8 or so, and from that moment on he was tormented. It was very sad. Michael struggled his whole life with Helen's death." In May 2022, David Puttock, Helen's surviving son, voiced his wish that the police would look at the murders again to try and get some closure for the families. "My dad George is in his 80s and has poor health. The murder still haunts him, and he deserves some justice. So does my mum. Dad didn't think it was right that me and my brother Michael knew at such a young age and tried to shield us from that. But we had heard some things from other kids and had a vague awareness, so Dad had to sit us down and tell us what happened to Mum. For a long time afterwards, I suffered nightmares and struggled with it. But over the years, I've read everything I could on it. But it often feels like I'm walking a tightrope with my dad. I don't want to bring back sad memories for him, so I try not to ask him too much." George Puttock passed away later that year. A month earlier, Jemima MacDonald's great-granddaughter Sammy had told a reporter for the Daily Record that she wondered if the murder had been racially motivated. The father of Jemima's youngest children was a man from the West Indies called Bunny Motley. Sammy remarked, "There are so many ifs and buts about my great-grand's murder. Perhaps she told the man who killed her about her children and Bunny. I have wondered if he killed her because he didn't approve of that kind of relationship." racism and sexism were and are not unusual. While researching the case for a BBC podcast, journalist Audrey Gillian uncovered police reports that suggested bias was present within the investigation. The victims were described as being promiscuous and fond of a good time. Gillian said, "I can see no empathy anywhere. There is, however, the sense that their behaviours may very well have led to their deaths. These victims are being judged and blamed for what happened to them even." The report also reveals the attitudes of the detectives who wrote them, prejudices that may have blinded them in their investigations. It is time that prejudice was exposed. So where are we now? After new photo fits alleged to resemble Bible John were released in 2022, an anonymous source contacted a reporter for the Daily Record, explaining that she suspected a man who had worked in a lab at the Glasgow Royal Infirmary. This individual had a religious background, spoke of often going to dance halls at the weekend, and his appearance was similar to the photo fit. Quote, "His behaviour was increasingly bizarre and worrying, and he got into trouble a few times. He died in the mid-70s, having killed himself in the most awful of manners. Bible John was said to have told Helen Puttock and Jean Langford he worked in a lab. I am convinced he is a viable suspect." The following year, a woman named Pauline Badger reported that she believed Bible John was a lab technician posted at RAF Halton in Buckinghamshire. Pauline told author Francisco Garcia that she suspected the man was responsible for the unsolved murder of 19-year-old Rita Ellis, who was training at the base. Rita had been found beaten, raped and strangled with her own underwear on November 12, 1967. The previous day she had been due to babysit for a senior officer, and while waiting to be collected, it is reported that she got into a vehicle belonging to the killer. There were others who suspected that the man responsible for the string of murders in the late 1960s was someone in a position of power. In a book by former police officer Paul Harrison, released in 2012 called Dancing with the Devil, the author describes suspicions that Bible John was a member of the police force. Speaking about the evidence provided by Helen Puttock's sister Jean, Harrison wrote, "She was adamant that she saw him show a warrant card to her sister before they left the dance hall. Beatty showed her his own warrant card and Jean said it was identical to the one Bible John had shown her sister. The man who was with Jean that night, known only as Castle Milk John, also told her he suspected Helen's beau was an undercover cop. Perhaps that is why he didn't get into their taxi and why he's never come forward." In BBC interviews with Jim McEwen and Brian Hughes, the detectives who had reinvestigated the case in 1995, it was revealed that a business card from the furniture store where John Irvin McInnes worked was found at the scene of Helen Puttock's murder. McInnes was interviewed a few days later, but McEwen and Hughes explained that there was no record of him being put on an identity parade in front of Helen's sister, Jean. Retired DCI Jim McEwen told reporter Audrey Gillian, "He doesn't appear anywhere in the initial statements. It was us that uncovered him. John Irvin McInnes does not appear in the 1969 inquiry anywhere." McEwen disclosed that when he showed a photograph of McInnes to the bouncer from the Barrowland Ballroom, who saw Helen, Jean and the two Johns that night, he recognised him. McInnes was also identified by the taxi driver who dropped Helen off when he was shown a photo lineup in 1995. it was suggested that McInnes's possible involvement was covered up, as his cousin Jim McInnes was a detective working on the case. Speaking with the Daily Record in 2023, Jemima MacDonald-St Allan revealed that the case was being re-examined by Police Scotland under the code name Operation Banyan. Allan said, "When the police officer phoned and said they were going to reinvestigate, that was a bit of a bombshell. I never imagined that they would re-look at it all. I'm not expecting that much, to be honest. They might openly admit these murders were not investigated properly in the first place, and we might get an apology over the way they were investigated. If they didn't investigate it properly, then that impacted on so many people so badly." Alex Docker, Patricia's son, added, "An apology would of course be appreciated, but to be meaningful it needs detail on exactly what the apology is for and what the consequences are. For me it would mean that the Bible John lead is at the very least suspect, and opens the real story of poor judgment, misdirection and a failed investigation. Let's not forget the Yorkshire Ripper case floundered on an assumption, and lives were lost as a result, so there are lessons to be learned. I thank the police for making this effort, and look forward to the conclusions." Operation Banyan was set up to examine how the original investigations into the murders of Patricia Docker, Jemima MacDonald and Helen Puttock were handled, and the actions of the officers involved. As of March 2024, there has been no update from the Major Crimes Unit which is carrying out the investigation. Thank you for listening. And special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.